and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 37. On this week's show, we have our latest entry into our Disney Movie Hour series with 1950s Cinderella. To my left, as always, is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Across from me is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. Sugarella by Pogo. You can find that video and more over at youtube.com/Pogo. His music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix. And his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at lastgenpodcast. But for this show in particular, you can find us at Diz Magic Hour. That is D-I-S Magic Hour.
Pod.
Magic Hour Pod?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have it in here wrong, actually.
Oops.
Yeah, oopsie. Good catch. And you can find us on Facebook. If you search for Disney Magic Hour, you will find our little group over there. And if you head on over to iTunes, hit that subscribe button and give a 5-star review, you will get your review read on the air, as we will later on tonight, because we have another review to read, correct?
Yep.
Hooray! So, new entry, Disney Movie Hour. This week, we are going to our first fully one-story animated film since... What was the last one?
Dumbo?
It was Dumbo. Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it was Dumbo.
Yeah, it was Dumbo. And that was a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels like that was a while ago.
Yeah.
So let's get into some little notes. Mel, do you have anything you wanted to say actually about Cinderella? I have a bunch of stuff. But did you have anything you wanted to say? And then I could check off stuff that I have on my list. We don't compare lists before we do the show, guys. So...
No, I just went through the cast list because I had a couple of things with that.
But... Okay, well, I have just some minor details in the beginning. With a runtime of this actually came out March 4th in 1950. It had a budget of nearly $3 million, and this is kind of the turning point for the company. You know, this is when things start going well.
Yeah.
Things start getting a little more steady, as you will see with the films that we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks. They're kind of the bigger films. Like, the 50s are kind of phenomenal for Disney as a company overall. Box Office Mojo has this film down as the lifetime domestic gross as $93.1 million. Now, that's based off of the 1950 original release and then re-releases in 1957, 65, 73, 81, and 87. So it's actually been quite a while since they've done this.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't really see it happening anytime soon.
Again, with those re-releases, I think those were like before the advent of VCRs and stuff. So I think those were like what implemented a lot of those re-releases.
81 would have been the very, very early part. 87, it was more of a commonality. But maybe it was just, you know, why not? You know, that was just the thing to do.
Yeah.
With a runtime of an hour and 14 minutes, it's actually the longest running single story animated film since Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Everything else ran underneath it or was like, you know, a live action or, you know, shorts put together as a thing. I didn't count Fantasia as well because there's the interludes and stuff in the middle and they're broken up stories.
Yeah.
This, of course, was based off of the classic story by Charles Perrault. And directorially, we actually see the return of somebody that we're going to hear a lot about through the 50s. And we referred to him when we talked about Song of the South. That's Clyde Geronimi. I'm not sure which one it is. Geronimi or Geronimi?
I don't know.
God, I hope it's Geronimo. I hope I'm just reading it wrong. But he also did he was an animation director, actually, on Song of the South. And he was the director for Toad and Ichabod, which we did two shows ago with Ryan Wilson, who will be returning, actually, by the way. When? I'm not telling you yet. Ha! So that was some of that stuff. Did you want to talk about the cast at all? I mean, we start off, of course, with Eileen Woods.
Well, actually...
Oh, you want to start without Eileen Woods?
Yeah. We start prior to that with the narrator.
You're a narrator.
Who I thought was interesting because...
They narrated.
It was the first female narrator. I thought that was interesting. It was Betty Lou Gerson. And she was actually the voice of Cruella de Vil.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah. So I was like, oh... Okay. But yeah, I like the fact that it was a female narrator. You had the classic, you know, opening with the book again, but female narrator. whose voice did not sound at all like Cruella, but
well, we're gonna get into that with a couple other voice actors that are in this film in particular, where they, you know them as very sweet in this film, but you in other roles, it's very, very opposite.
Mm.
Eileen Woods, of course, does the voice for Cinderella, and I looked up to it. This is her only acting credit.
Yeah, there was a. I couldn't Except find for, much.
Well, yeah, the only other thing was she did an appearance on the Alan Young Show, and she was only credited as the singing neighbor. And basically, what happens is as she's leaving her apartment, singing of like somebody that she met the night before, four people that are trying to sleep pop their head out of the windows and basically like, be quiet, we're trying to sing. And then they start singing, she's singing, and one of the four people that pop their head out is Thurl Ravenscroft. And I thought that was a weird, like, little Disney connection, you know, on this random TV show. I mean, I'd never heard of the Alan Young Show. But he was, Thurl's Ravenscroft was part of the Mellow Men with Bill Lee, Max Smith, and Bob Hamlin. So you can actually see her, Eileen Woods, like, singing. And she's not using the same tenor of voice that she does in Cinderella. She's using... In Cinderella, she's a lot lower. She's like an octave lower, basically. It's very dreamy, sort of, which obviously makes sense for Cinderella. But she's just at like a note higher in this scene. And it's quite good, actually. I don't have it on the page, but if I can find that clip again, I'm going to throw that on there.
Okay, yeah.
Because it was actually the entire episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was very... I think it was episode number 21 or 22. So if you search... If I don't have it on there, if you search for the Alan Young Show, episode 21 or episode 22... you can find it. You can find Eileen Woods in there. Eleanor Audley voices Lady Tremaine.
Yep, the stepmother.
The stepmother, yeah, the evil stepmother. And we will later hear her again as Maleficent.
Yeah, which there are times during the movie where you can hear just a bit that voice.
Yeah, yeah. It's not vastly different. It has blood connections in it. And she also was the body model. For this character, the live-action model.
Mm-hmm.
When Helena Stanley was the live-action model for Cinderella, and Claire Dubray was the live-action model for the Fairy Godmother. And speaking of the Fairy Godmother, that is voiced by Verna Felton, who you will hear from, again, this is all like the 50s. Like, the 50s is a lot of places where you're going to hear these names again. She voices the Red Queen in Alice in Wonderland, which I think shows her versatility really well.
Mm-hmm.
She voices Aunt Sarah, the awful aunt in Lady and the Tramp, the one who owns the Siamese cats. Mm-hmm. She also voices Flora in Sleeping Beauty. And then she voices one of the elephants in Jungle Book.
Yeah.
But that was released in 67, and she passed away in 66.
Oh, wow.
So it actually came out posthumously. Is that the right word?
Yep.
Posthumously.
Posthumously.
So actually, I thought that was kind of interesting because... That's sort of what happened with Walt, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they actually kind of had like two, you know, obviously Disney was one of them, literally. And then herself, you know, she passed away in 66, so I guess she never got to see the finished product. James McDonald voices two of the mice and the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot of voice work when it just comes to like making noises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He also voiced Chip on a number of occasions. But he also does the voice for the Dormouse in Alice in Wonderland, Evan Rude in The Rescuers, who's just a dragonfly, just buzzes for most of the part. So he does a lot of sound voice work.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like traditionally, like I have a script in front of me. And then the songs were written by Mark Davis.
I'm sorry.
Mark Davis, by the way, also.
One more for James McDonald. He did Humphrey the Bear in the short.
Two of them. There were two shorts, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a follow-up that I saw as well with that. The songs were written by Mac Davis, not Mark Davis. That's a whole other Disney thing. Who actually had 8 Academy Award nominations throughout his career. Also, the songs were done by Al Hoffman and Jerry Livingston. But the music, the orchestral, was Paul J. Smith and Oliver Wallace. Now, very interesting was that they actually do credit the live action models in the credits.
Yeah.
Because the credits don't specify who's who.
Mm.
It just says, quote unquote, with the talents of, and then just lists everybody. Huh. So kind of keeping in that tradition of like, we don't want you to know who the person behind, you know, the thing is. I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And actually, speaking of Mark Davis was one of the supervising animators on Cinderella, along with Eric Larson and Les Clark. Lady Tremaine was Frank Thomas. Fairy Godmother was Milt Kahl. Ollie Johnson was Anastasia Andrazel. So again, he's getting the comedy, mm-hmm. you know, for the most part. Jacques and Gus was Ward Kimball and John Lounsbery. So very familiar names. Ward Kimball also worked on Bruno, along with John Lounsbery and Norman Ferguson. Lucifer, again, Ward Kimball. No big shock there. Norman Ferguson. Willie Reitherman and John Lounsbery. Prince Charming was Milt Kahl. And then the King, probably my favorite character in the film.
He's definitely one of them.
He had the most personality of everybody.
Yeah.
At least I felt so. That was also held up by Milt Kahl and Norm Ferguson and voiced by Luis Van Rooten. I just like his name.
It's very nice.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
Couldn't really find out too much about him elsewise. But he also did the voice for the Grand Duke.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then the Grand Duke was supervised by Frank Thomas, Milt Kahl, and Norman Ferguson. So a lot of Disney legends are all over this film.
Yeah.
A lot. It is one of the more enduring Disney films. Obviously, you know, for people who frequent the Walt Disney World Resort, its main icon is the Cinderella's Castle.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that goes along with this film. But does it hold up from 1950 to now? Like, is it still something that you can sit down and enjoy?
I guess that's what we're going to talk about. Yeah.
That's what we're going to talk about now. Oh, and at the end of our... I always say this wrong. Always. At the end of the show, we're going to answer the three questions that we answer towards every film that we review here. What is the iconic shot of the film?
I have a lot. Spoiler.
You can only pick one.
I know.
That's why it's called the iconic shot.
I'm just going to let
like
you know.
It's like baked into the rules.
I have a lot I have to mention.
Okay. Does the film hold up? And then I always say it wrong. So, Melissa?
Is it a morals film or is it an emotional film?
Ah, yes. What is the main drive of the film? Is it trying to get an emotional response out of you or is it trying to teach a moral? Some do both. Most do one or the other.
Yeah.
So what is this one going to be? What is it? Ooh, 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 ooh. All right.
We'll find out.
Brian? How are you?
I'm good.
You're quiet so far.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys are giving the history lesson. That was information station.
So yeah,
it's information. There's not much to throw in there.
I was kind of thinking that this is kind of the way I want to do this from now on. Like, we'll just do the info in the beginning. And I was even considering writing, like, the summary. Like, in a way that I would describe a film to somebody. If I had, like, 3 minutes to describe Cinderella to you, how would I tell it to you?
That's tough.
Because I think that most people know these stories. And us going by it piece by piece by piece, I don't know.
I like it, though, because...
I also was considering a commentary, actually, for this week. I'm toying with the idea of us doing that once.
I like that idea.
Uh-huh.
I do like going scene by scene, or like we had kind of done with Ryan, where we kind of did a very loose scene by scene. It wasn't so strict.
Maybe that was what I liked better.
Okay. Yeah, because there are things, especially going back and watching these classics, if you haven't seen them in a while, there are certain things that it's like, oh, I never noticed that before. Or while we're watching it, I like to point out little things like that.
But, I mean, what I'm saying is after I do that description thing,
mm-hmm.
we'll then go back and just talk about all the little parts. But just to kind of get like the summary part out of the way. We'll test it out later. So let's start with this, though.
Okay.
So we go back to our classic storybook opening.
Yep.
I don't know why. I forgot to double check this, but the font, for whatever reason, made me think of Pinocchio.
What, the font of Cinderella or the text in the book?
The text in the book.
Did Pinocchio open with the text?
No, I remember. It was Jiminy Cricket is actually above the book.
Oh, right. Okay.
And we're going into the book. And he basically opens it himself.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it was the writing on the book itself or the writing of the cast and crew from the opening credits. I don't know why, but this reminded me of that. Mm-hmm. I think it was more the block letters that was going on during the opening credits.
No, yeah, I agree with you. Because, I kind of wrote down it's like a going back to that style, going back to like Pinocchio, Snow White, those types of, you know, credits and then the book opening by itself.
And you already spoke about the voiceover and whatnot, which I kind of liked. At first, I wondered if it was Verna Felton, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, evidently, because you told us it wasn't. Let's talk about the dress, because I know that this is a point of contention for you.
Okay.
And I noticed the change in the dress a little more blatantly this time because I was looking for it. But mm-hmm. she's Cinderella, as a young Cinderella, is clearly wearing a blue dress.
Yeah.
But later in the film, when she first gets, I mean, like, spoilers? Whatever. when she, you know, gets turned into, like, you know, ready for the ball Cinderella, that dress looks very silver.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
But then halfway through the ball sequence, it's blue again.
I think because they were at night, because you could see even the prince's jacket, which was like cream on the inside, is also blue in that scene. So I think it was like a nighttime thing.
Was it when
thing?
They changed the lighting for the when they were dancing?
No, it was when they were outside.
When they were outside.
When she was kind of like, oh, it's midnight. Okay. You know, and
yeah, like that's a blue dress.
It was like more of a baby blue, yeah.
So what you were saying, we're saying like in certain moonlight, it turns to silver?
It's like that internet dress that no one could tell what color it was.
That's a good point. Yeah. Actually, that might be it.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was a change in direction somewhere in the middle, mm-hmm. or if it is like, oh, it's because the light is hanging in this way.
I think
and
so,
the light is hanging
in
that way.
When then she's running out of the palace, when she's losing her shoe, it's back to that silvery color again.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, it's. I think it was in that scene... After they were dancing, it was like the moonlight and midnight kind of, you know, shadowy thing.
Well, swinging back to the beginning, so we basically see Cinderella and her. We get the evil stepmother immediately as a really nice use of shadow on the opening shot of her. And, you learn that basically her father died.
Yeah.
And now the evil stepmother, who you wonder, like, how dumb is the father? Because this woman, she tries to act nice in the film, but she never comes off as nice. She comes off as extremely fake nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is Cinderella's father just like a really gullible fool or...
I don't know. I mean,
doesn't matter.
They like, say he married a wealthy woman. I think at that point he was just like, I am a single father. I need a female, you know, figure for my daughter and I need money because, you know, I mean, in the live action movie Ever After, he marries the stepmother because like his farm is, you know, bankrupt and he needs, you know, finances.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. That's kind of what I'm just going with there.
So he's a gold digger.
He's a gold digger, yeah.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Dad. We basically go into now like Cinderella as a grown-ish woman. I've never really figured out how old she's supposed to be.
These like beginning movies like Snow White, Cinderella, and Sleeping Beauty, like even Sleeping Beauty, she's supposed to be 16. She does not look 16.
Yeah, no.
So I mean, I think somebody put up one time there was a thing, Snow White, I think is also supposed to be like 15 or 16.
Yeah. We'll just go with 20.
That's, you know what though? I see like for Snow White, the way she acts in the film makes more sense to me. Cinderella is supposed to be 19 in this film.
Okay. That makes more
Snow
sense.
Snow White, 14. Oh. Sleeping Beauty, 16. Belle, 17. Tiana, 19. A very mature 19.
Yeah.
I would have almost thought she was like 23.
Yeah.
Ariel, 16. Rapunzel, 18. I think that's right in the nose.
Yeah.
Mulan, 16.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Jasmine, 15.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't know.
That's uncomfortable.
Can we also just say that the way the animators developed Jasmine?
Yeah, Jasmine's a developed woman.
So much more than the stepsisters in this one. Like, to the point where I was noticing the stepsisters, like, they had no figures at all.
Oh, well, yeah, they're not supposed to. I mean, they're supposed to be, like, shapeless, just blah.
I know, but...
Frumpy.
Yeah. If they looked like Jasmine, then the movie, he'd be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
No, I know. It's just, it was so like, I don't know. It was so square. I don't know.
But they're supposed to be. You know that, right?
Like, they're supposed to be girls, though. I don't know.
They're supposed to be like the just genius. Yes, they have the DNA. Yes.
But everybody sees them, their looks are like,
yeah.
Even
the Duke.
Even the Duke's like,
oh, and just in case, Pocahontas, 18. Make that circle complete.
Yeah, yeah, wonderful.
She can talk to trees.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. Wow, we're really off base here.
That's okay.
So, Brian, what'd you think of our little opening going into, you know, what's going to be our, how old did I say?
19.
Our 9? No, yep. I don't think so. 19, huh?
Yep.
Cinderella? Yeah, 19. 19. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
19. Our 19-year-old Cinderella. Does the opening of the film, you know, is it okay? I understand where we are.
Yeah, it's fine for me. It told me what I needed to know, and it was like the classic opening to, you know, that we've seen before.
And how'd you guys like the animation?
I liked it.
Yeah, I really liked the backgrounds.
Yeah,
there was something more storyboardish about
mm-hmm.
them,
mm-hmm.
like sketchy kind.
Yeah,
of.
Yeah, they were almost sketchy in a sense, and I really kind of got drawn to that. I don't know if that's the Mary Blair influence a little bit mm-hmm. in there. It kind of felt like it.
I think it is. Yeah,
but I really kind of grasped onto that a lot. Also, obvious iconography is something like I see the castle and I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
See, yeah, when it's I saw like the
where
castle,
it started, you know?
When I saw the castle, like in the part before she starts waking up, immediately hit me. I'm like, it was like Small World, you know, because it has the white and the clock.
It's also kind of tall and thin.
Yeah. So for me, it was like Small World, which was the Mary Blair stuff.
This is the movie where Disney really doubles down, and it's a thing that you will see now for a lot in the talking animals thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'm very thankful for Cinderella for doing that because...
Yeah, you were not.
I'm not in... I will get to it as it comes along, but yeah. I don't think they're very funny in this one for me personally. And there's more story about the mice. There's more time spent on the mice than there are about Cinderella.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the runtime and I'm like, oh, an hour and 14 minutes. If you would have cut this down and made it a Dumbo length, maybe people would have said like, oh, again with the short film. So they wanted to pack it a little better. Mm-hmm. But they do put them to very good use because they're vital to the story because without their help, she gets nowhere.
Yeah.
But that's kind of maybe where I don't like it. But that's, I don't know. She can't do anything for herself. She's pretty useless.
Well, I mean, she grew up pretty much being like, oh, I'm going to be your servant instead of your daughter. Okay. Like,
yeah.
It kind of just shows like,
she should have just set the whole house on fire. And,
yeah, that was a thought I had throughout a lot of this movie. It's like, just, these people are miserable. Like,
just leave.
Just leave. Like, just what are you doing?
Yeah. Go do something else. Like, you can figure it out. You seem. She seems sharp enough,
capable enough. She's taking care of three grown women.
She can also command animals, so that's got to be worth something, I think.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah, she can speak and understand them and talk to them. Yeah.
So, you know, these birds are wearing shoes.
And little hats.
Well, she makes them for them.
She does. She actually makes them little clothes. Either she's delusional and insane, or she actually is making clothes for little animals.
No, I like the first option.
It's pretty good, right?
It's a pretty good one. Cinderella is all just in her head.
But then how'd she get the key at the end?
She had it all along.
She had it all along. Fine. Yeah, great. Okay. Fine.
I don't know.
So we now get the song, A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes, which she totally is a hypocrite, like 5 minutes later to the poor dog.
This song does get me a little choked up.
This song's beautiful.
No, it's a beautiful song.
And there is a jazzy sense, like a jazz room tone to her voice, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
It's more pleasant to the ear, I think, than some of the other voices. Even though I love all the Disney princess voices, she kind of has like one of my favorite ones.
She does. She was much more pleasant than Snow White. Snow White's really...
I really like Snow White. But it is like they were like, hey, we can't do Snow White again. What is the polar opposite, like tonally in the voice of Snow White? And this was a good fit.
Yeah.
We meet Jock or Jock. Hello. What would you say? Jock.
I mean, it's spelled J-A-Q. I think it's French.
Well, yes. The whole movie's French.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Was that what his accent was supposed to be?
No, he was the talking mouse.
He's a talking mouse. Yeah, mouse.
What's Gus Gus? German at this point? What are we saying?
He's Octavius.
They call him
Augustus?
Gus Gus.
What? Wait, no. I wrote down.
No, you're right.
No, it was Octavius.
Yeah, Octavius.
Yeah. I didn't know that Gus was short for Octavius.
I didn't either. I was like,
for Augustus, I can buy that, but yeah.
Would have made more sense, actually, if it was the other way around. So we meet more mice. We meet all these talking birds. Everyone's talking with each other. It's kind of weird.
I made a note because it was weird. I don't know if it was just the animation on the birds then going to the mice. Like the mice's eyes were just all black. And I had listened to a podcast about the Black Eyed Children, so I got a little creeped out.
Okay, so it's a podcast about creepy stories, at least?
Yeah.
Can I make that assumption?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Black Eyed Children are supposed to be, like, you know, possessed, or they're supposed to bring you bad things.
So. I thought it was just people who think black eyed peas is good.
Maybe.
And that's just as scary.
It's terrifying, actually.
Purple and green are the color for the stepmother's bedroom, which I thought was interesting because it's kind of like the evil queen, and then a lean towards Maleficent, who she would later voice.
And she's got the green eyes, which you had first noted in Snow White, where the evil queen and the huntsman had the green eyes, you know, the evil. Yeah.
Well, that I think that's kind of I don't know. I feel like green and purple is always kind of
universal,
associated with like more evil, because like Harry Potter, Slytherin houses,
Lex Luthor,
Lex Luthor, okay,
so. Classic Lex Luthor. Yeah, that's is purple
right.
And green.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so I don't know. That, to me, that just it makes sense. Actually, that's what I'm
no,
saying.
No, yeah, it does.
What about Power Rangers?
There are no purple.
There are none.
No. There was a green one. He went white and then looked like Seth Rollins.
Or was Seth he evil when he like was him. Green?
I think he was evil when he was white.
Really? Yeah. That sounds like the opposite of what TV always does.
Yeah.
That sounds really opposite of what TV always does. Because
he came in as the Green Ranger, and then he changed to the White Ranger. But I have to ask my cousin.
I think the green one is the bad one, and he turned into the white guy who was a good guy. I don't know. Who cares? What a dumb show. All right, moving on. Oh, so,
and Lucifer's yes. eyes are also green.
Of course.
Of course they are. Because it's Lucifer.
I know. I like the that name's name. Really on the nose.
Yeah.
It would have been great if they would have just pronounced it differently. Like Lucifer. Like, what? You trying to be like clever? What are you doing? So this is the part where my head kind of wanted to spin around. So Bruno, we meet Bruno the dog. He's having a nightmare. And Cinderella says to forget about your dreams.
Because his dreams are bad.
What the hell did you just say to this thing?
Because his dreams are bad. He wants to hurt the cat.
The cat's an asshole.
But that's his wish.
But that...
Yeah. And it's a dreams of wish your heart made.
Yeah, that right? would get him in trouble, though, with the stepmother, because it's her cat.
Well, you take care of it.
Yeah.
Do you really think that woman would notice if the cat was missing?
Well, yeah.
She did have... Lucifer did have the bed in her room.
Yeah, but she never really, like, references the cat. She only really...
Yeah, when she was punishing Cinderella, she was, like, petting him, like, you know, evil Dr. Claw.
Yeah, and I'll tell you right now, I don't think that he, you know, Mr. Bigglesworth, I think, mattered more.
Yeah, he did.
In Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Dr. Claw didn't care about that cat.
He loved that cat.
No, he didn't. Bring me a cut. All right. What are we going on here? Yeah, I wrote down here, I feel this movie started a bad trend with cutesy talking animal things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They, like, it started here, and then it just kind of ramped up in some films to the point of it's nothing but cutesy talking animals.
Well, it's different because, like obviously we have Bambi that was all cutesy talking animals. But here, it's, like, more Tom and Jerry. That's what I wrote down. It's like a Tom and Jerry
feel. The
mother
isn't, like, a caricature of a character. Bambi is actually a character.
And
these are all, like... Ooh, like just the cutest little version of what we can think of. Like I'll say that's different.
Yeah, plus they're animals talking to animals. This is animals talking to a maybe delusional girl.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Sounds like Ichabod and Mr. Toad. And Mr. Yeah. Toad, everybody was okay with that.
We all thought that was insane.
Yeah.
I just love the postman in that.
I'm telling you right now, Ichabod and Toad are way up on my list above this film. Way up. Way up. Actually, I didn't mind this movie as much as I thought I was going to. Note, Gus deserves to die.
Aw, Gus.
He's such a useless pain.
Mm-hmm.
He screws everything up on purpose. He does the same thing with the cheese later in the film like three times. Like, please just die. Mm-hmm. If he would have just gotten killed, everyone else probably would have gotten along a lot better. Jock is putting his life on the line like constantly just keep this imbecile alive.
He's cute.
Just met also.
Yeah. He's got, like, no manners. He's in no space.
He just doesn't understand the rules of the house.
Oh, well. He almost killed everyone.
Yeah.
All right. How about that rule? Don't let everyone die. It's like Goonies. Goonies never say die. You know what Gus says? I'll kill all of you for my stupidity.
Gus just wants the food.
That doesn't work on a poster, by the way, if you want to make a Gus film. I do like that when she is serving breakfast after the bells are going off and whatnot, she loses her shoe.
Yeah.
It does it three times in this film.
Yeah, this is slippery.
Rule of three, fairy tales. Yeah.
Well, she doesn't wear rule socks, so maybe that's why.
That's true.
She also has no toes.
Nope.
Did you notice that?
No, I did not notice that, really.
Yeah. In the opening sequence, when she puts on like her slippers, uh-huh. She has formless feet.
So she's got club feet.
She's got like Barbie feet.
Yeah, they have like no toes. They're just two blocks of clay.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
But they're shaped. They're shaped perfectly.
Yeah, they're shaped perfectly. And evidently they're, what is this, size 5.5?
No, it was 4.5.
4.5.
I think that was in like Cinderella 2 or 3
yeah.
also.
Yeah, that's another stickler.
What? Was that like in a Trivial Pursuit question?
That was on the cruise.
All right.
So is that cruise. The reason that she's the only one who's would fit in those shoes is because they're like extremely small?
Yeah.
That's a retcon. Okay. I got to imagine.
It's got to be, right?
Like, Well, she's kind of tall. How does she balance herself on size 4.5 feet?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I don't know. Maybe she's not really that tall. Maybe just everything else is short in comparativeness.
All right, maybe.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that.
I'll be, you know what? Yeah.
She could be like 5'2 for all we know. Like,
well, she could be. That means that no one is above 5'5.
Well, aren't they kind of a little short?
How tall is the king? Like 3'6?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's definitely a midget.
All right, fine. The king and the grand duke pop in after the breakfast serving scene, and they have great energy to them. I think their humor is actually funny.
Yeah.
And the whole scene of them setting up the ball I thought was great. I don't know why, but my brain placed these two characters in Sleeping Beauty.
Because
they share
is...
the same... They well, also the two kings in that film share the same kind of chemistry as the Duke and the King and Cinderella, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Okay. And you have a tall one, tall thin one, and a short round one.
Laurel and Hardy, yeah.
And the King Hubert, the short one, who's Prince Philip's father, he's very like jovial, and he does a lot of that, you know, talking but not really listening to what you're telling me. I'm just going to make my own assumptions kind of thing, you know, like what
yeah,
the
like
king
you were
does
talking
later.
About surfing just now, right?
Yep.
Okay.
100%. So yeah, it's a very similar dynamic and even very similar animation to the later.
Okay. You know. Actually, I'll even say Abbott and Costello probably is a better example than Laurel and Hardy because Hardy wasn't too short.
No.
He wasn't as short as like, you know, Costello was. God, those guys are awesome. I love that. Yes.
No, I was just going to say, I like the dynamic between these two also and the fact that he like just wants his son to get married so he can have grandkids.
Well, they were to me, they were the most interesting characters by far in the film.
They had most bubbly personality.
They're the ones with really only personality. No one else really has any personality.
The stepsisters are like just mean.
I know. I mean, I think the stepmother has a well drawn out, like she has goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does have
like
a plan.
She has goals.
Yeah.
Cinderella doesn't seem to have many goals until like something drops in her lap and it's like, I will go to the ball. Like, but before that, she had really no...
like, drive to do anything.
Yeah, like, she didn't have the scene where Tiana is basically, like, singing at the wishing star, like, I want this. Like, mm-hmm. I never really understood what Cinderella wants because she seems kind of accepting of her role, however horrible it may be. And maybe not wholly happy with it, but, like, she'll deal with it. Like, she'll just deal with it.
Well, she... to be honest, she never comes across like she's unhappy doing it. Like in that opening scene, like when she's getting the breakfast ready with the bell, she's also not even like...
yeah, they're like screaming at her and she's like, just
she's
a moment.
Like, exactly. Yeah. It's not like there's no annoyance in her voice or anything.
I mean, and I get that. She's supposed to be like a pure person
yeah,
and
course,
all that.
Yeah.
But it makes her seem very flat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very flat as a character. Even though I actually do like her.
Yeah.
But I want to see that she wants something, and I don't get that in this film. Yeah. We're talking about fairy tales in this way. But you know what? There are other films that they make where I do feel that, you know? Snow White's first sequence is, I'm wishing.
Yeah.
Like, you get it. Like, oh, she wants... I mean, I guess a dream is a wish your heart makes is you can say that's very similar, actually.
Yeah, we don't know her dream.
But that's what I was just going to say. We have no idea what her wish or her dream
it?
Is.
She doesn't describe it?
You say it doesn't come true.
I'm sorry? Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's insane, because that's just like your synapses when you're sleeping firing off. It really doesn't mean anything. You people are nuts. All right. Everyone's crazy in this film. But
it's really about an insane asylum.
But Sweet Nightingale is gorgeous.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite parts.
I thought this was absolutely fantastic. This is the art that I used for this week's show. The creative process of how do we make someone singing alone become a melody of that person's voice. I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, the bubble sequence, or the... you know, the melody that they use in Sweet Nightingale that then helped that you would have numerous Cinderellas in the reflection. Mm-hmm. But man, is that really well thought out, and it's gorgeous. It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Especially because you first hear it from the stepsister.
Which is not beautiful.
Which is not.
Yeah.
And then you hear it from her and just all the different melodies. And I don't know, it makes me think of like Beach Boy melodies and Beatles melodies and stuff like that. So this was probably my favorite animated sequence.
Yeah.
Here I remember when we were watching Fantasia, I had made reference to the bubbles in the angelfish Angel Fish scene.
Yes.
And yeah, the same thing here, you know, those bubbles and the way that the different colors play off of them. And, you know, in one of them, she's all like a pink hue and then a blue hue in another. I love it.
Brian?
Yes.
All right. Sing me Sweet Nightingale.
No, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, this was a great scene. I loved her voice. I loved hearing her sing.
Yeah, Eileen Woods has a really nice
voice. It was really nice. She, like you said before, kind of very like a dreamy voice.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Jazzy.
Yeah.
So now the invitations arrive. What invitations, Melissa? What are they?
From the king to the ball.
Yes.
The surprise ball for his son.
Even though the entire kingdom knows about it and is invited to it.
Yeah, is the son like an idiot? What's going on?
Maybe.
Well, he was away.
I love that painting of the son.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. Again, the best parts are the king and the grand duke. They really
are. He's growing away from me. Yeah.
And the pictures just get bigger and bigger.
It's the wall.
Yeah.
That was really great. Echo. The invitations arrive. Cinderella wants to go. She said, yes, you can go if you take care of your chores first. That's my Tremaine. Is that good?
No.
No? Was that not?
Nailed it.
Oh, all right. I thought it sounded like the movie. You know that they're going to screw her over. Cinderella doesn't get it yet. Yes, your hand raised like a 3-year-old. How can I help you?
Me. No, with this part, I thought it was great because there was another movie that I absolutely love that does the same thing that I'm wondering if it was a purposeful callback or if it just happened to work out that way. When the stepmother, you know, is trying to calm down the stepsisters because they're, you know, why did you say she could go? And she says, if she gets her chores done. And the stepsister's like, if. And it reminds me of Hercules when the pain and panic are, if he gets out of there. If is good.
It's close. We've seen a lot of stuff where there are parallels. Like, oh, okay, they must have liked this line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be a strange one, but it would be cool.
I mean, they went to Ichabod for Beauty and the Beast. If you couldn't get any more stranger than that.
Yeah, it does kind of work, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It
worked out really well.
I'm so glad to know that I have Gaston in two movies now.
Yeah, did you?
Oh, God, yeah. It really joys me.
Yeah, total side note. Did you watch Dancing with the Stars this week?
No, I don't watch it.
It was Disney week, and one of the dancers were Beauty and the Beast, and it was Beauty and Gaston.
No one must have done that before.
No, it was Belle and Gaston, actually. So why? She was dressed in her blue, and the guy was dressed as Gaston.
But why were they dancing?
Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, but why were the two of them dancing? It makes no sense.
Because they were dancing to Belle, the opening.
But they don't.
Oh.
Yeah, all right.
Was it like they were fighting?
I would have been better off if she was dressed like LeFou. I would have been okay with that.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been good.
And there was a giant chair made of...
Yeah, antlers. And he just throws it at the audience and kills somebody.
So good.
I would watch that show.
Yeah, I would watch that show too.
Write that down.
Okay.
Make notes.
Get
on it. Everything we just said.
I like to hear that.
Okay.
It was awesome.
So the invitation arrives. Yes. Cinderella she's not going to have time to make her dress.
No. What will she do?
So we got to get a song out of this.
This is a great song.
It's a great song. These mice are the most useful people in that house. That's pretty much what it comes down to.
Yep.
They not only are self-aware and can speak English, but they can sew.
Yeah, they can read and measure and cut. Perfectly fine.
We are outnumbered by mice
and
rats by like millions.
So we have to learn to subjugate them so they can make my clothes.
Or just kill them the way we were trying to catch the rats in the beginning. And Cinderella's letting them all loose and then like teaching them how to read. Soon they're going to know how to fire guns. We all need guns because rats.
Yeah. Ratatouille.
So Lucifer was really the hero of this movie.
Well, not really because he didn't do anything.
Did they murder that cat at the end of the movie?
Oh, they definitely did. That cat was dead.
Cats can fall from pretty high
height. That cat
was nowhere to land.
Up at the camera when he went out the window.
He turned around last minute.
Yeah. Cat was looking up at the camera.
I understand cats can land on their feet, but when they fall from 900 feet, it doesn't really matter because those feet explode.
Gravity is still gravity. It doesn't care what animal you are. It's not like, oh, never mind. Let me soften this. Like, that's not how it works. So... we get the Cinderella song. Every song from here seems like a Disney classic song.
Yeah.
I like this song. I thought it was very, very cute. But again, we go to that whole cat-mouse sequence with them getting the pearls and whatnot, which don't seem to go with that dress.
No, I didn't think so either.
That looked terrible.
No, the sash made sense because it was pink, but
yeah,
not
but
the green turquoise beads.
God, there's a reason she didn't want them. They're disgusting looking.
Yeah.
But the cat and mouse sequence, it was lengthier than anything with Cinderella up to this point.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. And it felt like, you know, they just used Gus as the idiot to make things take longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was sort of like, we're padding time here. Like, you know, and I was into the, I wanted to just stay with Cinderella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's not that interesting, though, I guess.
But they could have made her interesting. You wonder why? Because to my, or I actually haven't seen it yet, but I will guarantee you that Cinderella is the main character in Cinderella, in Kenneth Branagh's Cinderella.
I'm sure they do, just like they do with Ever After. They probably give her more to do, more,
well,
you know.
They could have done that here, then.
It was the 50s. I don't know.
You're the 50s.
Girls don't do things.
What? All right. You know, it was a better time. All right. Let's go. So Cinderella, you know, is tired. She can't go. But then she goes upstairs, and they light things on fire, and they're like, we have a dress.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Yes, because it wasn't her birthday. I got that joke. I'm sorry. Is her dress ugly? I kind of thought this dress was horrid looking.
I mean, I'm glad they got rid of the puffy shoulders. There was a lot of bows, though.
When it got ripped up, I was like, you know what?
This looks kind of better.
Because if you would have went anywhere with that, embarrassing.
I would say it's not about the dress, it's about a personality, but that's not true.
Oh, no. You know what? When we get to that, I will say something that I was surprised to see during that sequence, actually.
Okay.
So, she comes down with her ugly dress, and they're going to go, and everyone's like, yeah, dress is ugly, and they shred it on her, and they're like, we're trying to help you. And then they leave. That's all I remember.
I don't know if you remember
that
correctly.
That's an accurate representation of what happened, yes.
I then wrote down, there is a better version of this story where Cinderella murders everyone Carrie style at the ball.
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't know if we can go back and make that, but...
That'd be Ken fan fiction.
That'd be pretty amazing, honestly. I want Sissy Spacek, of course, to play Cinderella. Now, I don't even care how old she is, she can still do it. And then what happens, Melissa? Tell me. She's at her lowest point.
She does what every girl does. Runs all the way to the garden, all the way out there. And
that was a long route to get to that garden, I feel.
Yeah.
Long
large
run.
Grounds. Large
and,
grounds.
Threw herself on a bench.
Yeah.
Because that's where I would throw myself.
Yeah, why not?
And cries.
But she gives up. Like, that's it. She's about to give up now.
Yeah.
She went really from, like, 0 to 100.
Because she was seemed... like, I'm okay, whatever. You know, they treat me like crap, but whatever. And then she's like, screw it.
Yeah. This is... Enough's enough.
Yeah.
I can't possibly do anything but stay here, which just doesn't make sense, but...
Just get the mice back on it. Come on.
Yeah. But, you know, she's at her lowest point, and the fairy godmother appears. With a really nice effect.
Yeah.
I like that effect, the way that she shows up. And quicker than I remembered, you just basically go into the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo song.
Yeah, well, she's got to make stuff.
She's got to make stuff. She doesn't do the obvious things of making a horse a better looking horse.
Yeah, nope. No.
I mean, she's kind of weird. She's kind of nuts also.
She's forgetful. She forgot where she put her wand.
That's a good point. Again, Gus is trying not to be helpful, and he isn't, because he should die.
Aw.
Yeah. I hope you're sad for Cinderella for having to deal with this imbecile and the mice that whose lives.
Saved him. It's her own.
The mice that he puts in danger every day. All right? That's all he does.
Maybe he's the real hero. Maybe he's actually trying to get rid of all the mice for us.
Who?
Gus.
No, he's not the hero. He's not the hero.
Yeah.
He's not.
Yeah.
He's like Forrest Gump without accomplishing anything.
Okay.
Like, if you just watched Forrest Gump be stupid in a room, you'd be like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess this is 3 hours long and there's a feather somewhere. Okay. So we have the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. We have all this. We have her get her dress, her silver-looking dress, but a dress, very nice, very nice.
That was definitely, yeah, I noticed that.
I really like the horse here. In my mind's eye, this is the same horse from Toad. And he's simply just like, I'm going to go over here for like a couple of days and see what like rich white people do. I'll be back. Yeah. And like as soon as this movie is over, Toad shows up, throws a saddle on him, and they're like, they just go on a road trip.
He's like, I just found a carriage. Come on.
Well, it's just a pumpkin at that point.
I know. But now he understands what a carriage is.
Yeah, it's true. These animals are nuts. All right, so Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. Any thoughts on this particular? Still works. I think it's a great song.
Yeah, no, I think it's
good. Carries up. The animation is really, really nice. It's very active. It's a very up scene. A lot happens. The fairy godmother breathes a lot of life into this film.
Yeah, especially the juxtaposition of Cinderella being so low to now being very upbeat and happy with this song and being like, we're going to change your life and everything. It's going to be fabulous.
And it's fun that, like, you know, she doesn't recognize, oh, yeah, the dress. Yeah. You know, yeah, that's one of the, she's just really, really well. It's just, she breathes a life into it the way that the king and the duke did. But she's not on the screen very long.
No, she has a very short part, but she brings a lot of personality to it and a lot of, she besides the other two, she's the best part.
Yeah, for a character that has become so timeless in, like, the Disney history, she really isn't on screen very long. I would say, what, 6-7 minutes?
If that, I think that's
around there. That might be pushing it a little bit. But right around that time. So, very, very cool. It was fun watching this for the first time in a very, very long time. We go back to the best part of the movie with the Duke and the King, and he's playing yo-yo with his monocle. Great.
And he keeps switching eyes. I noticed that. Like, one time he put it on the right, another time he put it on the left. I'm like, it's which fine. Is your bad eye?
That's like the hump from Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Cinderella shows up. The guards do a very Beauty and the Beast type turn, which is actually really, that is more of a lean also from the original Beauty and the Beast, the opera.
Okay.
So, but I thought that was kind of cool. I like that. The animation of this huge staircase looked very, very nice.
Yeah.
It was very, very beautifully done. Everything looks lavish.
And it had like an ethereal kind of feel. Yeah, it does. You know, it wasn't like heavy and, you know, I don't want to say like thick, but you know, like that.
No, there's a like a haze. There's like a slight haze to it. They did that with the original 1978 Superman.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually like a little bit of Vaseline on the lens in sequences to give it like that dreamier kind of look. And that's how it accomplishes that. Unfortunately, he didn't, you know, break anyone's neck. So it wasn't. Moving on. Batman vs. Superman. Drink. If anyone watches Film Basement, you're on the clock. We get a really nice waltz version of So This Is Love while they dance. Yeah. I never recognized this before. I didn't realize that that's what it was.
Oh, really?
No, it just didn't click in my head. I thought this was really, really nice.
Yeah, no, I love that. I always thought it was like, you know, the opening, you know, how it starts.
Yeah. And then we go into, you know, So This Is Love, which is internalized. They're not singing it out loud to each other.
Yeah.
And it shows that they're actually talking.
Mm.
So I thought that was something also I did not recognize. This wasn't like, well, I guess really Sleeping Beauty, Snow White and the Prince. Like they say like three lines to each other and it's pretty much like, I'm going to kiss you when you're dead. It's like, you're freak. Get out of here.
Yeah.
I said hello to you. I love you. Let's get married. Bye.
Yeah. Which has kind of become like so cliche that now Disney pokes fun at itself, you know, for doing stuff like that. And like in Frozen most famously and recently. I thought this was a really cool choice, though, making the song internalized and then showing them actually having conversation and talking for a long time. I mean, she is there till midnight, not just dancing, like they're talking.
Yeah, they're walking through and they're, you know.
So I'm curious, again, I have not seen it. I wonder if they flesh out those conversations a bit more in the new film by Branagh. I am assuming they do.
Because
he's very character driven, you know. I mean, like he directed the first Thor, which is like the most Shakespearean Marvel film you're ever going to get. So, Brian, how'd you like this?
It was beautiful. But my one thing is, if they were talking,
yes.
She didn't realize that he was the prince the whole time they were talking.
Oh yeah, that is a little weird.
Isn't that a little weird? Because she doesn't know that that's weird. The prince.
She doesn't.
No,
she doesn't.
I just thought she didn't know it, like when she first met him.
No, because when she goes to leave, I think she says something about it, right? Doesn't she? I believe she said...
Maybe I got that impression because later when the guy comes to the house or she hears a proclamation, it's like, oh, yes, this one woman lost her shoe dancing with the prince. And she's like, and the prince?
She's like surprised.
And I was like, wait, are you surprised because you just heard this? Or are you surprised because it's the prince?
I'm not sure. Was surprised because, like, they said that he wanted the person she danced with to be his bride. So it was kind of like, oh,
but
I'm going to...
she says the prince?
She does, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't take it that way.
Maybe I'm just looking into that too much. Because, yeah, I wasn't sure if she knew who it was. But, man, who else would he be?
Any other nobleman? I don't know. I guess if you're not maybe, like, familiar with that, like, you know, hierarchy or
Yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying.
Plus, she didn't go in and do the whole bowing thing and meet him like that. He came to her, like before she even got into the ballroom. All right.
So you know what? There's even grounds for maybe she just didn't put it together.
She didn't put it together yet. But
like,
I just
meant, everyone's walking around with a sword. Like there's just things that you do. Yeah, I guess
they all got those things on their shoulders.
Yeah, everyone has sashes and buckles and.
Yeah. Usually within the first like 2 minutes of a conversation, you know, would be like, "Hi, I'm." Brian.
Maybe he doesn't want to do that though.
Maybe not.
Maybe he's like Aladdin. That was the opposite of Aladdin.
Well, yeah, it was the opposite. Yeah,
Aladdin's an awful liar. Yeah. Deserves to die.
Yeah, be yourself.
Yeah, which he doesn't.
I liked how when she was entering, the Duke was like saying to the King, "Like, what do you want? Just him to see her across the room?" Like he was narrating that was
cool. Yeah,
but I liked it.
Which I don't know if like they did that on purpose because they were saying, "Look, this is going to come off as a little too cliche, a little too corny." But if we have someone saying it and it like breaks that moment, then we can actually have that moment and not have it interfere with how we want to tell the story.
Yeah, like it won't look so cheesy if we are making fun of it, but it's happening at the same time.
Yeah.
But I like that.
I actually did like that. So I did write down here, though, you know, this is where I noticed, you know, the dress was silver. Now it is blue during the midnight sequence.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the midnight hits and she's got to get going.
I'm out.
And the Duke sends the horses of hellfire to chase her down.
Yes. Yes.
What the hell?
I don't know.
Like faceless demons. With red eyes and black cloaks.
Yeah.
Just go, like, bring her back here.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus.
It turned real
quick. I never understood where, why, like, she ran so fast. Like, if that was chasing me, I would have ran faster.
Yeah, like, it's like Lord of the Rings all of a sudden.
And then they just, like the Nazgul, get called out.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the Grand Duke of Saruman. It's all coming together.
Yeah, I just looked it up quick while we were talking. She didn't realize that was the prince when.
Ba-dum-bum-bum. Yeah, I guess not.
During that scene, she didn't know that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, I dress like this all the time.
My normal gear.
Like, looks uncomfortable. I guess they didn't walk into the room with the massive painting of himself on it as they were walking around the castle.
Well, they walked outside, so.
Yeah, but just imagine that moment. Be like, hey, what do you got here? Is that like a painting of you? It's like, yeah, no, yes. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
All right, cool. So, yeah, so the Nazgul go and try to get Cinderella. And
everything is changing back.
Everything's changing back. They smash pumpkins, which obviously made me think of what we just watched last week with Ichabod.
Mm-hmm.
And there we go. The king and the duke. The king tries to kill the duke.
That was the best. Loved. Yeah.
And then as they fall from the ceiling, the king, or the duke, whichever one, lets out a goofy cry.
Yeah.
A very like goofy cry.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we go to the next morning, basically, and the stepmother's still being the stepmother. And she's going to lock this woman in her room. And the Gus takes forever to help. And every time that, like, the key is free, he does something stupid again to exploit, you know, to make it take longer. Really, she just killed him.
Remember how you guys, on your Star Wars commentary for Force Awakens, had timed when they said, you know, the thing's charging?
Yeah.
The amount of time it would have taken them to get that key up to Cinderella's room, and it was just the two of them trying on the shoe. I was like, what are they doing for, like, 20 minutes?
At the pace they were going, because they were like, that was a slow go.
Step by step, and her room is up in the huge tower.
I would say because the Duke was, like, falling asleep.
Yeah.
That helps give, like, okay, he's asleep, so he's not realizing how long they're taking trying to get this thing to fit.
But the other guy?
The other guy's just a slave, sweetie. This is nothing but a...
And he's
it's
not,
a country of slavery.
And he's not too bright because he thinks the first one, the shoe fit because she had the rest of her foot hidden under her dress.
Yeah.
And then the next one, he thinks it fits and she's got it bent like a U inside the dress. Yeah. So he's not bright.
He literally just follows another guy around and makes people try on shoes.
Yeah.
He's not important.
He brought them the invitation to the ball.
Yeah. That's what a slave would do.
He's a well-dressed slave. Look at that.
Well, hey. That's good. Good for him.
He's got a wig.
He does have a wig, which is great. Good for him. I want a powdered wig. Who doesn't?
Oh, we should do
powdered wig
show. We should all wear powdered wigs.
I'm okay with that. I would antique you also. Yeah. And slap you like a Missy Elliott video. All right, so
we're
trying on these shoes. Evidently, no one else in the world has a size 4.5.
No, unless you're a child.
Could have been a 12-year-old girl. Okay. All right, let's say someone else's foot fit. And because, duh, there's got to be somebody, right? Because, I mean, she's 19. She's not that old. Small feet. Okay. If someone else came up and he was like, this is clearly not the person I danced with yesterday, would the king have been like, all right, well, kill her. And now go and find me the real person. Like, whoever tries to come here as an imposter, I'm going to murder you.
No, I think it was like, whoever fits, bring them in. Because then they're at least a viable option. And then we'll see, you know, how they look. And I'll judge from that.
Well, maybe it was going to be, try it on. If it fits, do you have the other shoe? Maybe. Yeah, maybe he had like 20 questions.
That wasn't even a thought.
No, yeah. It wasn't even, yeah.
I forgot about that. That she had the other shoe.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. So Tremaine trips the Duke because he's about to try it on Cinderella, who finally gets out of her locked prison by the idiot mouse and the other ones who were trying to help her.
Well, there was a really great part.
Oh, and they murder a cat. Can we go back to that for a moment?
Yeah, no, you have to go back a little bit.
Murder a cat.
But you know what?
It's awesome.
But it comes
might be my favorite part of the movie.
And it comes full circle because she lets the dog live out his dream.
Who let that dog out?
Who? What?
Technically. Also, we get a really good spot here with the evil stepmother. When she's scheming to lock Cinderella in her room, she has, like, it goes the close-up on her eyes, very much like Maleficent.
Yeah, very, very Maleficent in the way that she's presented in the film.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Maleficent in her. But yeah, the dog basically, yeah, a dream is a wish your heart makes. And he's like, I'm going to make this come true.
Yeah.
And I'm going to force this cat to commit suicide out of this window.
Well, yeah, see, Cinderella knew you can't hold down a dream.
You can't, yeah.
That's pretty awesome, though. He didn't murder a cat. It's pretty good. This, you know, when he gets like 3 stars for that alone. If more movies had cats getting thrown out of windows from unescapable death, they would be funnier. Every movie would be funnier.
I can't wait to watch Oliver and Company with you.
Do they throw any cats out of a window?
I don't know.
See, because like, I remember watching American Tail, and I was like,
it's not enough mouse throwing.
Yeah.
Cat throwing, I mean.
Yeah, we need some dead cats in this film. But that's not how it worked.
No.
So Cinderella tries on the shoe. It's a perfect fit, which means that she barely can walk because those feet are tiny. But it's a dumb plan. Not a great plan. I know the king really wants his son to get married, but he's really opening up fire.
He doesn't seem like he thinks things out very well. I don't know how good of a king he really is.
Everyone seems fine. I mean,
everyone's alive. So
even
I'm
the people in indenturement are like, yep, I'll accept this. It's only when they can't go to the ball that they really have an issue with it. So, happy ending. They live happily ever after. A very kind of cut the, you know, that's it. We're done here, folks. They're married.
Yeah.
Get them out.
She loses her wedding shoe.
Yeah. She loses her wedding shoe. So she doesn't know how to walk.
No. Maybe 1 foot is slightly smaller.
Maybe.
And that's why she keeps losing it.
All right. I find that plausible.
Well, I mean, that's normal.
So then she's obviously going to fall down the steps in the castle to her death.
Yeah.
Soon.
As long as she has grandkids, the king doesn't really care.
Then again, she has formless feet. Maybe that's not helping.
Maybe it's because she has no toes.
Yeah,
she has no toes.
There you go. We figured it out. We've solved it.
Her clay block feet. It's like Gumby.
No, they're like Barbie.
I'm Gumby, damn it. All right, whatever. Let's...
Need more girls on the show.
Do you have any idea what that reference is?
No.
Oh, no. Now. All right.
Disney, that's all I know. That's all I got.
Does this film hold up? Melissa.
I think it does. I think it holds up a little bit more than some of the other ones. You have a classic princess. You have beautiful songs. You have, you know, I don't think the film really loses me in any points. You know, I laughed at the, you know, cat and mouse thing. It's very Tom and Jerry. I don't know if it flows with 100%.
Did you just say a cat and mouse thing is very much like a cat and mouse thing?
Well, no. You know what I meant. Yes. I mean Tom and Jerry as in like that goofball slapsticky stuff. Like the cat's nose goes into the square hole and he comes out with a square nose.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't like that part of it.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Well, because it reminded me very like a weird cartoony thing that, I don't know.
Yeah, we had mentioned that with something else recently. Oh, with Ichabod and Toad, like being very like Warner Brothers type of slapstick kind of.
That was really good though.
I know.
Liked it. No, I didn't say this one. I was just saying like that was really good. So it works for you still.
For me, yeah, I think it's fine.
It's fine. That's the way you said it makes me think like.
I enjoyed watching it. I wasn't as hesitant to watch it as say you were. I don't know if like on a Saturday I'd be like, let's pop in Cinderella. But okay. If it was on, I don't know if I'd change it.
Okay. So like everything else that you watch on TV.
No, there are certain things.
Brian?
I guess parts of it hold up for me. This is not a movie that I would watch again. I wouldn't pop this in and watch it again. Not that it was bad or anything like that.
We're not the target audience.
Exactly. I'm not the target audience. For little girls, maybe this would hold up. I think with its connection to the parks and how strongly it's connected with Disney World and that sort of stuff, it definitely holds up still. It's because you got the fairy godmother and Cinderella's castle in the parks and the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, like all that sort of stuff. So I think from that aspect, it definitely holds up. From a story-wise perspective, for me, there's really not much of a story going on. I mean, I know it's a fairy tale, but it's not something that I would watch again. But like Pete said, it's not our target audience. We're not the target audience for this film.
Yeah, I do think it holds up. I think that there are... I wish I would have had more Cinderella in the Cinderella movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think overall it does hold up. The animation is really beautiful. The music is really, really standout.
Yeah, the music is still fantastic. Yeah,
the music may be my overall like favorite thing of the film.
Yeah,
I think that that's pretty timeless. I enjoy the voice acting. I think it's all pretty very well acted. I think the stepsisters do a really good job at being exactly what they have to be.
And they were not. I thought they were in it more than they were. Thinking back on it, I thought that they had more of a prominence in it.
Yeah,
they're really
not
in it very much.
There was way more of the cat and the mouse thing, which if I could change anything, that would be it. But I can see why a young girl's going to love this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Young girl's going to love this movie. I think they'll absolutely adore it.
And I mean, unfortunately, even though I love Sleeping Beauty, this one I think holds up a little bit better, especially like connection to the park, even though Walt Disney World is the only one that has Cinderella's castle. The other ones have Sleeping Beauty's castle. But
I also think that as underdeveloped as Cinderella is, she's more developed than Sleeping Beauty is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that's why.
Sleeping Beauty is like barely in that film.
Yeah.
She's sleeping.
Is it a morals film or is it an emotion film?
I think it's a morals film. I think it's kind of clear that, you know, if you're good and pure and, you know, do the right thing, you'll get what you want. And if you're not, you'll not get good things.
You'll fall from the top of a tower and die like a cat. That's great. What do you think, Brian?
I guess it would be more of a morals type film also. Dreams really do come true type of thing. Mm-hmm. For me, it didn't hit me on an emotional level, but I'm not a little girl.
I don't even know. I mean, you can feel pity for Cinderella, I would say, but I don't think that's the main drive of the film.
Yeah.
That's just to get you invested into seeing her succeed. But I would definitely say this is more of a morals film of following your dreams and even in the face of downtrodden and the evil, you know, stick with your best qualities. Never go to their level.
Yeah.
Never go to the, unless it's to murder a cat. Then murder away.
Yeah.
Swing away, Meryl.
That is what I took away from it.
Melissa? The iconic shot.
No,
you
I
have to pick one.
Yeah, save me.
All right.
Wait, can I just like mention them all? We could pick.
You have to pick one.
You
though.
Have to pick them.
You have to pick one.
Can I mention them all?
You can mention. Wow, you don't get this concept, huh?
Well, there are a lot of them. Mostly.
No. That's not how this works. The whole point of this questionnaire is, if you could put an image, one single image, what would it be?
I can't do it.
You have to.
I can't.
Brian?
All right, I can do it. When the Duke is putting the glass slipper on Cinderella's foot for me is iconic.
For mine, it's her running down the staircase and losing the slipper. Yep. I think that's my favorite shot. Melissa, what is your favorite shot? I'm giving you 10 seconds because this battery on this thing is going to die.
Okay. Honestly, for me, it's when they're on the bridge, when they're walking on the bridge over the water. It's like in the middle of the whole dance sequence.
It's in the middle of the This Is Love sequence?
Yeah, and it's just them on the bridge, and they're walking, and their image is reflected. I know no one else maybe will think of it, but...
No, he keeps saying This Is Love, and I keep, baby, don't hurt me. That's what keeps coming into my head. What is love? But it's not what it is.
Little
but,
Hathaway.
Yeah.
That would have ruined the mood. Okay, yeah. I actually don't remember that specific scene.
Yeah, I'll bring
it
up.
I mean, that specific shot, I should say.
Damn.
I definitely remember that scene.
I'll show you.
But okay, all right. So that would be your iconic shot if you could represent the film with one image.
Yeah.
All right. Very, very nice. Also, kind of a little similar to something you might pick in Sleeping Beauty.
No.
No? Wide shot of them?
Nope.
Oh, okay. All right.
I know what you were talking about.
Okay.
No.
No. All right, guys. We're going to wrap. Yes.
The review.
Oh, the review. Let's read the review. I shall read.
Just the bottom review. One. We got one.
Not just for the Disney movie lover. This is from Katie Lou 536. This is a great podcast. As a Disney fan who is more into the parks than the movies, I wasn't sure about it first, but I have had a great time watching the movies along with the podcast. It made me appreciate Disney movies a lot more. I also love the very honest opinions that this podcast is targeted towards an older audience. Thank you very much. Thanks so much for all the work you guys put into this every week. Thank you so much for listening every week. And you made me think of the movie Cat Baloo with your name, Katie Lou. So if you've never seen Cat Baloo, see Cat Baloo. It's hysterical. It's like some of the best drunk acting of all time is in Cat Baloo. Melissa, do you have something else you wanted to add on?
Nope.
No? Okay. I saw you looking at your phone, so I didn't know.
I was going to bring up the image for you.
I think she's trying to look for the image.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll do that later. Let's do our exits because
I'm out.
Battery is going to be screaming at me very soon. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this weekend. Next weekend, actually, I take that back. Early next week, we're going to have our review of The Jungle Book up. That is a new release, the live-action CG combo film from Jon Favreau. We're going to have that for you Monday. So there won't be a show later in the week next week. There will be a show, though, on Monday coming out for you. And we will have a special guest, Maria Riboli, from Unleash the Magic podcast that is part of the Last Gen Podcast Network will be joining us for that review as well. So until then, right now you are listening to Sugarella by Cinderella. Wow. You are listening to Sugarella by Pogo. You can find this video and more over at youtube.com/Pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his website is pogomix.net. Who are we? Anyone?
We are lastgenpodcast.com.
We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Last Gen Podcast, and for this show we are Diz Magic Hour Pod. And if you head on over to iTunes and give a 5-star review, we will read your review as we just did earlier. And definitely come on over to the group in Facebook. It's a very active group. It's been a lot of fun lately, and you can find us by searching for Disney Magic Hour. Then add yourself. We will let you through the gates, and that'll be it.
And then you'll be part of our family.
Family.
Oh, hi.
Weeble wobble.
I just got over last week's episode. Don't start over.
Did you cry me a river, Brian?
I did.
Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Pete. Say goodnight, Pogo.